This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Hugo Sharp from the Oz Wine Show. How are you, Hugo?
I'm doing very well, Chris. Thanks.
Excellent. Quite nice. Oz Wine Show, UK Wine Show. Nice we tie in there.
Sounds almost planned.
Yeah, almost. I'm in Sydney now, so I thought we'd have an opportunity just to have a bit of a chat to you about your show and also some of the other things that you're up to and maybe a wee bit about the Australian wine scene from your perspective. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. Very good. Yeah.
Excellent. Let's talk a wee bit about the Oz Wine Show. You've done, 11, 12, 13 shows now?
Oh, 15 is ready to go out the door.
Yeah.
So it's not many over, I think it's over 2.5 years now.
So, I know, because you were out before we started.
Yeah, it was a good start, but the endurance seems to have waned a bit more for, essentially, it is a hobby, and just timing of producing the shows, and I sort of held them to a higher standard than I probably should have given the time I could commit. But, they've been really fun, and I've always been wanting to get up to that one a week stage, but just getting them out the door is always a tough thing.
Yeah, it takes a bit of effort, I must admit. What was the reason you started the show?
I started the show, I was listening around about February of 2005, I started listening to podcasts, and wine podcasts were one of the subject matters that I found myself listening to quite a lot. Grape Radio mainly, Winecast, Wine for Newbies a bit, but they're all American focused, and though the content was good, applying them to my own wine experiences was a tougher task.
Yep.
Given they're all Californian wines or French wines, and Australia doesn't see many, a few French wines and definitely not many Californian wines at all, so no one else was doing Australian wine podcast, so I thought I'd do one, and I knew the technical side and roped in a friend who knew the wine side a lot more than me, who had a big history in the wine business, so I thought it was a pretty good team, and that's how we started.
Excellent. A lot of the shows recently, it's just been you doing the interviews. Who's the other fellow?
The other guy's Mick Barrett, who's done a number of wine vintages since he was a teenager. His dad's down at SA Uni looking at viticulture, and teaming up got hard to team up with certain shows. So I found that it was easier for me to just get along to wine shows and accost winemakers and steal 10 minutes of their time. So I found I had a lot of recording of tastings and that sort of thing. So I've just been, that's the level of activity I've been able to achieve, is just getting those out.
Who's been your most popular person to interview?
Most popular person interviewed on the show, because it wasn't me doing the interviewing, was Ernst Lausen from Dr. Lausen Wines of Germany.
Yep.
That's been far and away the most popular show in terms of downloads. And that was done by Dave Brooks, who runs an Australian wine blog called Vinosense, vinosense.com. And he said he was doing that interview, and I said, oh, can I record it? So I went along and recorded it, and Ernst is a really great character of the international wine world, so it's a really good interview, that one.
We did an interview with Wines Germany, they're the generic body in the UK, and I got a lot of feedback from people saying they really liked the show, they would have preferred some more high-end German producers. Do you get a lot of German wines over here?
No, not many at all. Yeah, it's a funny game in Australia. It's probably much the same as the UK, but we don't sell in supermarkets, though supermarkets nowadays do generally have a liquor store just on the side of it, which is a separate counter and that sort of thing. But and they house a lot of generic wines. Then you've got retailers that probably don't have as many outlets as the supermarket outlets, but they are more specific. They have higher-end stuff. And then you've got your very high-end retailers, but there's not many of those. And one owner will probably only own one or two stores. So that's your spectrum. And to find good international wines, you're going to have to go to those high-end boutique places.
Yeah.
and to be near one of those is a barrier. And then to have a rapport with the staff and the owner is not a challenge, but just something that needs a bit of time if you're going to be spending money on international wines. Because we certainly don't get that many cheap international wines. So if you do want to go international, you're going to have to spend $50 or more.
I had a look around. I haven't looked in the supermarkets yet, but I've had a look at, is it Vintage Cellars?
Yep.
They're a chain of stores. They're not too bad. And a couple of the local ones, Ultimo in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
They had some interesting wines, particularly Ultimo. There was like loads of French, you know, high-end French stuff, all sorts of things. But maybe not the international range that you'd get in maybe even a supermarket in the UK.
Mm. Yeah, Vintage Cellars is good. They have a number of stores and they have a good range, both cheap and expensive wines. But yeah, it's still limited to, you know, what they're buying that month or that season.
Yeah. In the UK, we have loads of wine shows. You know, every week you can't move for opportunities to sample or quaff. There's always something going on. What about in Australia? You know, you've got your big shows, haven't you?
Yeah, there's definitely big shows. Yeah, they'll run for 4 or 5 days, 2 days of judging, and then 1 or 2 days open to the public, normally on the weekend. And they're really good, but I don't think you sort of have to be in the know of them to get along to them. They're certainly open to the public, but I don't know that the public are aware that they're really even invited to a lot of them.
Do you have to pay to go to them or pay at the door?
Generally, yeah. So there's the one aimed most at the public would be the Good Food and Wine Show in Sydney, mm-hmm. which obviously has food and wine. Half of it would be wine, and then that's $20, $25 to get in. And then you can obviously taste wines from the producers.
Is it free sampling or is it?
Yeah, it's free sampling, yeah, but yeah. You can't buy. You can only get their details. You can't buy at the event.
Yeah, yep.
And they're good. It is a bit of a hustle and bustle. And so to get the ear of the person behind the stall and actually find a bit, you know, find out more in-depth details about that winery can be a bit tough.
What about the competitions here? There's quite a few competitions. Do you follow the competitions closely?
Yeah, there's a number of wine shows. And they range from big city shows, Sydney Royal Wine Show, Adelaide Wine Show, right down to regional wine shows, and even you get the occasional touring biodynamic show or things like that, themed events. Yeah, there is a bit of a show scene, and it is used a lot for wineries to tout how well they've done in, you know, with putting the little stickers on their wines and that sort of thing.
So would you say the Sydney big one?
Sydney Royal Wine Show, that's a pretty big one.
And the other one was the Melbourne?
Each
state.
Major, yeah, capital city generally has their own show, and each region will have their own.
So, like, I've seen, awards for shows and that I've never really heard of from Australia, so I'm just trying to work out what. If I see an award for, say, the Sydney Royal Show, that, you know, if there's a gold standard there or something like that, then that's a pretty good event. Whereas if you see the Orange Regional Wine Tasting Show for primary schools, is that?
Yeah,
I'm just trying to work out which of the shows that when we see these stickers on the bottles in the UK.
So you get all the stickers, do you?
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes.
It's the best guide would be to go for the bigger the city, the bigger the award, I guess.
Yep.
But, yeah, the stickers can get a bit dubious when you get down to the bronze stickers and that sort of thing.
At a regional show.
Yeah. But, they're a decent guide. But if that's all you've got to go on, then, yeah, it's probably more an issue with the retail stores in that you're more limited to what they stock as opposed to, you know, the best wines being available for you to buy.
What do you think are the most up-and-coming areas in Australia, or the areas that are sort of, you know, the most interesting areas at the moment? You know, you're obviously based in Sydney, so you've got Hunter Valley and Orange around you, Mudgee. But, you know, I did a show from the Granite Belt up near Brisbane a wee while ago, and a lot of people really like that because Brisbane people don't even know they've got a pretty decent wine region just beside on their back door.
Yeah, yeah. Up-and-comings, I haven't had much from the Granite Belt, and I do find myself in the Hunter Valley a lot more than any other region. My girlfriend said I can't have any more trips to wine regions until we've gone to somewhere without wine.
Oh, no. So, Marlborough.
I've tried New Zealand, yeah, but she caught me on that one. Up and coming regions. There's certainly regions getting more awareness. Mornington Peninsula,
yep, I guess. Down Melbourne.
And to define awareness, I mean, people in Melbourne will know about it, but a lot of other Australian or international people won't know about it. But yep. Yeah, they're doing some really good pinots and that sort of thing. Margaret River, which is in WA, which is just south of Perth, that's always been a well-regarded region amongst the industry, but I'm hearing it sort of mentioned to me from, you know, a lot more from general public is you know, I had this really good Margaret River wine.
Is that because they weren't really affected by the drought and they're the only people who really can supply pulp grapes now?
I'm not too sure, actually. I think the bulk grapes do come from the plains of New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia.
There's Riverland and
yeah,
Riverina.
Yeah, and the Adelaide Plains and that those sorts of places. So they've still been, they've got irrigation, they're still churning out the wines and they'll often be noted as southeastern Australian or just South Australian in terms of the categorisation, categorised area. I don't know how affected they have been by the drought, but I think they've just been plugging along and just doing what they, you know, what they know and what they do best and just refining their wines and, yeah, they're producing some really good stuff at the moment.
I was up at Orange yesterday and they look like the drought's broken now. Well, for them anyway, mm-hmm. They were like pretty convinced that it was fairly wet and it was a wet day I was there, so everything's pretty green. Is the drought broken? Because you're now moving into a El Nino effect where generally it's a lot wetter.
There's La Nina and El Nino. I'm not sure which we're moving into, but I know there has been some rains. It's really dependent on the area. As to if the drought's broken or not. You say orange is green, so I can only say that the drought's broken there for the time, which is good. But I'm sure there's other areas that are still doing it tough.
Yeah.
But in terms of, I guess it's that old quality and quantity gradient as to whether we'll see the wines, more wines at a lower quality or...
Do you think the droughts improve the quality of the Aussie wines?
I think it's well regarded that that has been the case, though last season there were some pretty nasty frosts that did a lot of damage, probably from a fair way south of Orange down through to north of Adelaide. I think they got some nasty frosts. But, yeah, there's definitely been a long string of well-regarded vintages for the last 3-4 years.
And that's due to the drought?
Yeah, I think so. And so we have, from all reports, I think we have moved out of the glut.
Yep.
And it didn't take long.
No.
With the droughts for us to move out of that glut. So, yeah, there's less wine being produced, but I think it is generally of a high quality.
What about when we were covering the news, we saw Lindeman's, because of the drought, were actually buying wines from Chile and Argentina to put in their branding in the UK because they just couldn't get the grapes at a decent price. Did you see a lot of movement in grape prices?
I don't track grape prices much, but I do know that when we were in the glut times that a lot of contracts were cancelled from the big winemakers to their outsourced grape growers because they had too much wine and so they just didn't source from as many grape growers. So I do know that contracts were cut there and... prices, I imagine, were pretty low at that point, but as I said, it's swung around pretty quickly, so I don't quite know where the grape prices would be at this point.
Yeah, yeah, okay. What about things like GIs, the geographical indicators?
Yep.
I've seen some big bun fights with King Valley and a few other things going on. Do you want to comment on GI issues from an Australian perspective?
Yeah, well, I've just been looking at GIs a bit with the new site that I'm putting together because I'm having to... put those GIs into the database for each wine to be tallied against a region. And, yeah, there's some, I don't know about inconsistencies, but there are some interesting facts that come out when you look at the GIs. They're run by the AWBC and it's a panel that assesses them. And, I mean, it's a very tough thing to try and regulate because you start off with zones and then within each zone you've got a region and then you might have sub-regions in that zone and it's all sort of dependent on climate and you know, even microclimates when you're getting down to the sub-region scale. And yeah, you do find that, you know, there might be a huge area that is just one region, and I don't know whether it's just because there's not a huge number of wineries in that region that it hasn't been splintered into more sub-regions. I think it is dependent on the wineries within each region requesting, you know, to be either a region or a sub-region. I think you need 5 producers in one area for to be eligible to ask to be called a region. And there's no real area delineation. I think it's more climate and soil and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think one of the biggest anomalies is Tasmania. And I'm not too sure of the reasons, but there is no, there are no sub-regions in Tasmania. It's just the Tasmanian region, which I think will definitely change soon.
The climate changes from the west coast down to Hobart. You know,
yeah.
It's quite wet on the west, isn't it?
And especially the grapes that are being grown. I mean, it's a cool climate area, so you've got a lot of Pinot and Chardonnays and that sort of thing, both for table wines and for sparkling varieties. So I think when you're growing a grape for a different end product, be it sparkling or non-sparkling, I think there might be a case to apply to have different regions, you know, depending on what the end result is.
Oh, okay, in Spain you have Cava. It covers a large region in its own right up northeast of Spain. That it also overlaps other regions as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's definitely, it's big enough to almost definitely have a lot of microclimates in it. So, and yeah, with the different grape productions, yeah, there would certainly be overlapping uses for the land.
So what else is new for you, Hugo?
At the moment, I've been spending the last year almost planning and developing a new social wine site mainly for looking at Australian and New Zealand wine regions and wines. It's open for anyone in the world to use, but I think the main benefit is for people mainly drinking Australian and New Zealand wines. Australia's at least is certainly doing some very good stuff with on the boutique front, and I'm very proud of boutique Australian winemakers at this point. They're sticking with what they do best and focusing on their regions and just crafting some really good wines and at decent prices relatively. And that's where I'm passionate about Australian wine. And it's on that small scale front where you get a lot of regional aspects coming out in the wines and you know, winemaker influences and that sort of thing. And that, I guess, is a driver of this site, is that I wanted to promote boutique wines and regions and get people, first of all, knowing the difference between each one and then being able to use that difference to pinpoint the wines that they really like. With 2,000 to 2,500 wineries in Australia, plus New Zealand wineries, you're going to have, you know, tens and tens of thousands of wines, and to get through that needs, I think, the help of a little bit of technology. So Project Vino is essentially about enhancing wine experiences, your wine experiences, and that's right down at the small scale of tasting wines, rating wines, and then getting recommendations of new wines to try, and then up at the bigger scale of just when you're out in the regions, enhancing what you do in the regions by giving you, you know, printable tools that you can take and suggest places to go if you haven't been to any of the region before, and tracking your thoughts and then feeding that back into the site and getting new recommendations. And it's a site that I hope will promote individuality amongst Australian and New Zealand wine makers.
What's the site called?
It's Project Vino, and it's at projectvino.com.au,
or
it's everything at the moment. So it's the main site's at .com.au, but
you can get to it anywhere.
Yeah. So that's been my focus, and that's taken away from Oz Wine Show for the last year, but it's up and running, and it's free to sign up and use. So
you talked about good economic, good priced wines with regional characteristics. Mm-hmm. What price point would you recommend if you're visiting Australia? You know, what sort of price point should you be looking for wines?
Yeah, that's a good point, because there's definitely a difference between Australia and UK prices in pure numbers. But I'd say $18 as a minimum. You know, if you don't want to muck about, you can certainly. I mean, it'd be reasonably hard to go wrong over $20.
That's $20 is like £9.
Yeah, I'm probably biased because I spend a little bit more than the average price on wine, but that average, I don't know, if you go into the stores, you'll see most things are $15.
Yeah.
There's obviously things at 10, but you wouldn't find much below 10. Yeah. So the price ranges are definitely higher in Australia than the UK. But $18-$20 Australian, and you're pretty much set.
Drinking well.
Yeah.
Okay, Hugh, I think we'll wrap it up there.
All right, thanks for that, Chris.
Cheers, mate.